With so many options, why choose Arizona State University?
For me, the only online option was ASU because of the quality. Their faculty was really involved with their students and care about your personal journey. The dedication to my personal development from my professors, that's been extremely valuable to me.
Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university. Online. That's a degree better. Explore more than 350-plus undergraduate, graduate, and certificate programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast is adapted from my YouTube channel, and this episode is part of my Vault series, where I'm turning my back catalogue into podcasts. So, if I ever reference photos or things on screen, please remember that these episodes were originally made for video. Also, if research or references seem out of date, please bear in mind as well that some of these episodes were recorded as far back as 2016. I just want to make sure that all of my content is available on podcast as well for you to enjoy. If you wish to find me on YouTube, I am just Georgia Marie over there, and with all my disclaimers out of the way, enjoy the episode. So today we're going to be talking about the very strange murder of a woman named Mary Mars Kaywine, or it's also known as the carbolic acid murder. Mary Mars Kaywine was a 39-year-old housewife from Kentucky. She lived in a town called Lexington with her husband, Madison Kaywine, and their two children. So our story starts on July 4th, 1965. USA Independence Day. Mary and Madison are going out to celebrate Independence Day with two of their friends, Sam and Betty Strother. They're intending on going to the Idle Hour Country Club. Now, I feel like I should give you a little bit of a background here on Madison and Mary, just so you kind of know the sort of people they were. Madison was actually a doctor. He specialised in haematology, and from what I can gather, he actually was a very good doctor. He managed to help a lot of people with what he did, and he came from quite a not a really prolific background, but I think in the area where they lived, people knew who the Kaywines were. And Mary came from a similar kind of background. Her dad was a really successful thoroughbred breeder. And so they had money and they were sort of high in society. They're sort of described in a lot of the sources I read as socialites. And they weren't struggling for money. So Madison and Mary and Sam and Betty that night head to the Idle Hour Country Club for drinks. Both of the couples had two children each, but one of the Kaywine children was actually out with a friend that night. So the Strothers took their two children around to the Kaywine house and they had a babysitter in, 62-year-old Phoebe Edwards. By 6:30 p.m. on July 4th, they were at the Idle Hour Country Club drinking cocktails. From what I've read, they had about 5 cocktails before dinner each, then they ate dinner, and then they had about 5 cocktails each afterwards as well. They were drinking a hell of a lot, but from what I can gather, they were generally quite heavy drinkers anyway. For me personally, if I had 10 cocktails, I would be paralytic on the floor. I'm done after 2 cocktails, I'm a lightweight. But I know personally people who can drink 15 cocktails and still be kind of okay. So I think it very much depends on your tolerance to alcohol and how much you usually drink as to how drunk they were after this. I think it's easy to say they were really, really drunk and on the floor, but then it depends on their tolerance. Somewhere between about midnight and 1:30 a.m, they decide to leave the country club and return back to the Strother's house where they continue drinking. However, when they get there, Mary turns around and says she's not feeling well and she wants to go home. So Sam Strother drives Mary home, which nowadays I know is horrific to think about. He's 10 cocktails down, probably a couple of beers down as well, and he's driving Mary the 3 blocks back to her house. Would never happen nowadays, but this was 1965 and it did happen then. When they get back to the Kaywine household, obviously the babysitter is dismissed, she's not needed anymore. So Sam, instead of deciding to drive the babysitter home himself, decides to call a taxi and waits with Mary until the taxi arrives. And they get themselves more drinks, Sam opens another beer and Mary pours herself a bourbon and water, and they go up to the Kaywine's master bedroom to drink them, which again just sounds very strange, but apparently it was the only room in the house that had air conditioning and it was a very hot July night. In the room, Mary sits in an armchair with her bourbon and water, and Sam sort of stands there with his beer chatting. After about 10 minutes, the taxi arrives, the babysitter goes home, and so does Sam. When Sam leaves, Mary's sat in the chair drinking her bourbon, seeming absolutely fine. The children were of course asleep, and Sam didn't want to bother them by waking them up and taking them home, so he decided just to leave them at the car wines. And he left Mary in that chair, and that is where she died. Sam returns back to his house where Betty and Madison are still drinking, but Betty soon decides to go to bed, so Madison and Sam are the last ones standing. They have another beer, and their night ends at about 3 a.m. And Madison apparently at this point was completely just so drunk. Apparently he could barely even stand, let alone get himself home. So Sam just said to him, "You can stay in the family room." And Sam actually had to help him undress and get into bed. That is how drunk Madison was. But of course, it is important to bear in mind here as well that they had been drinking a lot that night, all four of them. So accounts of this night, I don't think can be taken for gospel. I do think you've got to sort of take it with a pinch of salt. The next morning, about 9 a.m, Betty tries to call Mary. Now, I'm assuming it was to see what time she could come get the kids. I'm not gonna lie, in all of the sources I read, the kids weren't really mentioned after the fact that the babysitter was looking after them. I'm presuming they're in the house with Mary dead for quite a few hours. Did they just not realise? Did they think she was asleep in the armchair? I'm not sure what happened with the kids here, but I'm assuming Betty was calling Mary to like say, "I'll come around and pick them up." So she calls at 9 and there's no answer. So she calls again an hour later, about 10 a.m, and there's still no answer. And Betty just knows this is very strange, it's very unlike Mary, so decides to drive round to the Carwine house. She opens the door because the previous night has been left unlocked and the porch light was actually left on as well. But again, this wasn't particularly strained. The Carwines always left their house unlocked, and I think a lot of people did in that time as well. Betty wanders around the house looking for Mary and can't find her, so assumes she's still asleep and goes into the master bedroom, where she sees Mary slumped in her armchair still. She's slumped to the left, bourbon still in her hand, and Betty sort of tries to wake her up and there's no answer, so she goes to touch her and her skin is cold. Betty knows something's up, so immediately calls her husband at home and tells her husband to drive Madison round as soon as possible. And this is where things are a little bit weird, because Madison walks straight up to the bedroom and walks up to his wife, and she's very clearly dead at this point. She like, there's nothing you can do to save her. But instead of fussing over his dead wife, he picks up the empty beer can and the glass of bourbon and water and passes them to Sam and says, "Dispose of these now." And then Madison calls a doctor. I'm assuming because he was a doctor himself, he knew a lot of people he could call, but he decides to call Dr. William Winternitz. William arrives to examine Mary and pronounces her officially dead at 11:30 a.m. He speculated that she obviously died in the armchair whilst reading her book. She hadn't even attempted to get undressed. She was pretty much left in the exact same position that Sam had left her the previous night. Dr. Winternitz did also notice some tiny blood spots as well on Mary's slip and on the armchair in which she sat. Madison was immediately convinced it was suicide, and he started telling everyone that she definitely committed suicide. He did also consent to an autopsy, so Mary's body was taken to the University of Kentucky Medical Center. In the autopsy, Mary was confirmed to have a blood alcohol level of 0.4%, and bear in mind that 0.8% at this time in Kentucky was the legal driving limit. She was four times over that. 0.4% was very near a fatal level of alcohol in her system. However, it wasn't the alcohol that killed her. The autopsy showed that she had actually ingested carbolic acid, which had burnt away her stomach and had caused acute gastritis. Can you imagine how painful that would be? You've got acid in your stomach that is literally eating away your stomach from the inside out. That would be so painful, but I'm assuming that Mary was so drunk that she didn't really feel it happening because she hadn't moved. The autopsy estimated that the time of death was between 2 and 6 a.m, which is a very broad spectrum of time. The autopsy also noted that Mary had very small injection sites on her thighs. I think there were two little tiny pinpricks on her thighs, but they said that she had definitely ingested it. It hadn't been injected into her, it wasn't in her bloodstream, it was in her stomach. The official coroner's report read that she died of unnatural causes and not her own hand, which went against what Madison was saying, that it was definitely a suicide, and it also said that it was acute gastritis due to phenol or phenol-like material. Phenol's basically another word for carbolic acid.
It's Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances and save an additional $1,000 when you buy four select LG major appliances. Plus, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 5-amp-hour battery when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max tool. Get the job done for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/26. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for more details and qualifying items.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Now, carbolic acid wasn't a household item at this time. It was actually very specifically used, and it was used as an antiseptic in the medical field. And not everybody would be able to get their hands on something like that. And I know what you're immediately thinking. Her husband, Dr. Madison Carwine, was a doctor, and therefore he could easily get his hands on something like that. But bear with that thought, we'll talk about that more later. Madison immediately brought into question the abilities of the pathologist who did this autopsy, even though four other doctors had actually witnessed the autopsy and said that it was pretty flawless, he hadn't done anything wrong. But Madison made Mary get a second autopsy and the showings were the same, obviously. It is very strange that Madison was so convinced that it was wrong, it was definitely suicide. Was he hiding something? July 10th, just a few days after the murder, Madison spoke to Mary's mum, and he actually told Mary's mum that he'd come straight from the hospital and he'd found out that Mary had died from taking too many Alka-Seltzers and the buildup of gas in her stomach had caused a heart attack. At this point, Madison would have known her actual cause of death. He would have known that this wasn't true. Was he maybe trying to spare her mum the pain of knowing that her daughter's stomach had basically been eaten away by acid? Did he think this was a sort of better way for Mary to die to save her mum's pain? I don't really know. The police obviously treat this like murder, as the autopsy says, and they begin to look into Mary's personal life, and what they find is not a happy marriage. Turns out that Madison Carwine has been cheating on Mary for a long time, and Mary knew about it. The previous year, he'd had an affair with a fellow doctor in the haematology department called Emma Lepat. Mary did know about this, and I'm not sure if Mary finding out was the catalyst of Madison ending it with Emma, but all I know is that the previous autumn, it had ended. But he had recently started another affair, and this time with a patient of his called Barbara Liepman. And here we have yet another doctor coming into the equation. She was married to a Dr. Herschel Liepman. Now, Madison had recently asked Mary for a divorce, reportedly, and I'm not sure how Mary took this news. I'm assuming if she knew she'd been cheated on for the last 2 years, she probably expected that a divorce was in the pipeline, but we don't know her full reaction. I don't know if she was relieved or upset or just very neutral about it. But Mary was very concerned about the affair that Madison had been having. Not for herself, but she was actually concerned about Madison. She reportedly said to her grandmother that she was scared that Madison would lose his medical license for having an affair with a patient. And she also was scared that Barbara's husband would kill him when he found out. So I think here at this point we have three fairly obvious suspects. We have Dr. Madison Carwine, we have Dr. Emma Lepat, and we have Dr. Herschel Liepman. All three of them would quite easily be able to get their hands on something like carbolic acid. But before we dive into all the suspects, let's actually look at the method of murder here, the acid. Now, like I mentioned before, carbolic acid is not something that is easily found in everyday life. It's not a household item. You kind of have to be in that profession, in the medical field, to be able to get your hands on it. Apparently, when ingested, it takes the acid about half an hour to start burning away at the stomach, but this isn't an exact science. I don't think they've done tests on people by making them ingest carbolic acid so they can see how long it takes for it to start burning away at their stomach. That's not something the medical field can really ethically do. But the doctor said it should take about half an hour, but it could take longer, it could take less time. There are a couple of different possibilities here. One possibility is that it was put into one of her drinks at the Idle House Country Club, and it took quite a while to start working. Maybe that is why Mary started to feel ill when she got to the Strother House and asked to be taken home. Or was she just feeling ill because she'd consumed a nearly fatal amount of alcohol? and somebody happened to break into her house after she had passed out in her chair and forced her to drink the carbolic acid. This could also explain the two injection marks in her legs. Maybe she was given something to paralyze her and then forced to drink the acid. Or the third explanation here is that the acid could be in the bourbon that she was drinking. So the suspects, let's start with her husband, the obvious one, Dr. Madison Carwine. So he had asked her for a divorce and wanted to leave her, and she wasn't really putting up much of a fight. He had no reason here to murder her from what I can see. She wasn't refusing to divorce him. She wasn't really angry at him for having the affair. She was quite neutral. She was kind of making his life as easy as possible. Like, he's had two affairs and she was kind of like, okay, you divorce me, whatever. She's not kicking off about it, from what we know anyway. I think it would make more sense here if he is the one that died. If she had poisoned him for having these affairs and trying to divorce her, that's understandable. But why would he poison her when he's the one trying to divorce her? He's the one having an affair. He's just not a great human being. It's not her fault. Maybe he just wanted to avoid a messy divorce. Maybe he was embarrassed. But still, I don't think that seems like reason enough to murder your wife. A compelling piece of evidence against him, though, is that a syringe was actually found in his bedside drawer. And when police confronted him with this syringe, he kind of didn't have an explanation for it other than, like, I don't know how it got there. Like, I'm a doctor, I have syringes. So this syringe was found. I don't know if they actually ever tested what was inside the syringe, but the actual needle part of the injection was never found. So they didn't really have much to go on. More evidence against him is the fact that immediately when he saw Mary, the first thing he did was dispose of the bourbon glass, which is possibly the biggest piece of evidence in this case. I'm sure that that probably would have been tested by the police if that was still there, to see if the acid was in that glass. And the fact that he immediately, like, goes to this glass and gets it emptied suggests that maybe he knew something was in there. But let's say that he did know the acid was in that glass and that's why he disposed of it. Why would he wait for Betty to go round there and discover his wife dead? Surely it would be a lot easier for him if he went round there and he was the one who discovered his wife being dead and he raised the alarm. I just think maybe if Betty had seen Mary, and instead of her first reaction being to call her husband, she'd called the police, then if Madison had murdered Mary, that would have all unravelled very quickly. But let's not forget that Madison had a very solid alibi. He was seen by both the Struthers asleep in their family bed that night. He had been undressed by Sam, he was put to bed, he was so drunk he could barely stand up, he wasn't in any state to walk the three blocks home, murder his wife, very cunningly leave no evidence behind, and then get back to the Struthers' house and get into bed and not wake up until the next morning.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Unless he wasn't as drunk as he seemed, but he was seen by a lot of people downing that alcohol. Maybe he had poisoned the bottle of bourbon a long time before, and it was kind of just taking a chance as to when Mary would drink it and Mary would die. Maybe he was playing a long waiting game here, because there was no way he could have predicted the way that night would turn out. There's no way he could have predicted that he would be too drunk to go home and that Mary would feel ill, so have to go. It just doesn't make sense. And also, he had two children in the house, and unless he was as bad a father as he was a husband, I don't think he would have taken that risk, putting acid in a bottle that the kids could drink. I'm not obviously saying that the kids are stealing their parents' alcohol left, right and centre, but it's a chance and I don't think a parent would want to take that chance. Next up, we're going to talk about Dr. Emma LaPatt, the first woman that Madison had an affair with. Well, the first woman, I suppose, that we know of anyway. Like I mentioned before, she was also a doctor. She worked in the haematology department with Madison and the two of them had started this affair and it had ended the autumn before Mary died. If we're looking at the affair, I suppose it's most likely that Madison turned around to her and said, no, I can't be with you anymore. My wife's found out. I love my wife. I want to be with her. And just kind of ended things with her. I'm assuming that's a logical way for this to have ended. And then months later, Emma finds out that Madison's having yet another affair with a different woman. And she now feels like the shunned mistress. And let's say she hasn't taken it well. She was insanely jealous. And the only way I can describe her from here on out is a stalker. She would drive past the Carwines' home constantly to see if Madison is there. She would drive past the Leapmans' house constantly to see if Madison was there with Barbara. She would call Barbara, she would call Barbara's husband, she would constantly call Madison. She was unhinged. She even approached Barbara one day and said to her that she has to stay away from Madison. But Emma definitely seemed to hate Barbara a lot more than she hated Mary. Barbara was the woman that replaced Emma. But Mary was kind of always there, and I don't ever think Emma saw Mary as a threat, but she definitely saw Barbara as one. Barbara kept receiving strange phone calls, and then one day, Dr. Herschel Liebman receives a very strange phone call himself. And this phone call is from a very emotional woman informing him about his wife's affair with Dr. Carwine. And later on, after hearing Emma's voice in person, Dr. Herschel Liebman has turned around and said it was definitely Emma that called him and told him about the affair. Emma even spoke to the secretarial staff at the hospital, and obviously in these days, if somebody wanted to speak to a member of staff at the hospital, they'd have to call into the main office, and then the main office would have to transfer the call to the right sort of place. And Emma basically said to them, if Dr. Carwine gets a call from Barbara Liebman, do not forward it on to him. Now, like I've said before, Barbara was actually one of Madison's patients. She had Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is how they met. If you're not already convinced that Emma was a crazy stalker obsessed with Dr. Madison Carwine, I think this might change your mind. So one day, Emma intercepts Barbara's test results. And Emma, being a doctor herself, suggests to people what treatment it is that Barbara needs. And actually purposely gives the wrong treatment. She gives a treatment that is so much stronger than the one that she should be receiving, and this would have potentially put Barbara's life at risk. And luckily Madison spots this error and manages to correct it and gives Barbara the right treatment, but Emma was very dangerous here. But you've probably noticed here that Emma didn't actually really do anything to Mary that we know of at all. All of her anger was definitely directed at Barbara. So why would she kill Mary? Actually, even after Mary's death, Madison and Barbara continued their affair. It didn't stop them. So if Emma's aim here was to kill Mary and stop Madison having his affair, it had the opposite effect. Now Madison was free to have affairs with whoever he wanted. Our last suspect here is the third doctor in this story, Dr. Herschel Liebman. Now, like I've already mentioned, Herschel was receiving very strange phone calls from a woman, the woman who informed him about his wife's affair. But on the night of Mary's death, July 4th to July 5th, he was actually on the night shift. At about 2 a.m, he receives a message from the secretarial staff. And they basically say to him, your wife's at home, she's requested that you go home, she needs your help. And Herschel immediately knows that this isn't right, something just isn't sitting right with him, because he knows if Barbara wanted to speak to him, she wouldn't leave a message, she would actually like wait to be rung through to him. And he immediately sort of started to question if this was actually a message from his wife or not. He suspected that somebody was trying to make him go back to his house to catch Madison and Barbara in the act, let's say. Of course, we know that's not true because Madison was out that night. He wasn't with Barbara. He was at the country club with Mary and his friends. So I'm still not entirely sure what the point of this message was. But Herschel goes back to his house and finds Barbara asleep in bed. Weirdly enough, he actually contacts the county police for advice, and I'm not sure what they said to him. I couldn't find those details, but I just find it weird that his first port of call here is to contact the police about his wife's alleged affair. It's a bit weird. But also when he's back at home checking on Barbara, he notes down all of the license plates on the cars in the area, then goes to the police station to get these license plates checked. I suppose in his head here, he's trying to see who these cars belong to, if any of them belong to Madison Carwine. They obviously didn't. And he explained his situation to the officers. He said that his wife's having an affair. He's trying to find out, but he's had like lawyer advice, and his lawyers have said not to physically confront this man because obviously he doesn't want to like, implicate himself. And they said that he just seemed very distressed, a bit disheveled, like a bit all over the place. But he didn't seem upset about his wife's affair. I think he'd had a bit of time at this point to come to terms with it. And that wasn't what he was like freaked out about. But then again, if the police are saying this in hindsight, knowing his connection to Mary Carwine, maybe that has distorted their view of what actually happened that night. I do have my own little theory here, and Herschel had been told by lawyers not to harm Madison because he didn't want to implicate himself. If he wanted to get a divorce from Barbara, he had to like stay on the straight and narrow, shall we say. But maybe Herschel had the mindset of an eye for an eye, and Madison had taken Barbara from him, so he was going to take Mary from Madison. If this is what happened, clearly that didn't work out for him either, because Barbara and Madison still continued their affair. Another interesting point here is that Barbara was reportedly pregnant at the time that Mary died. She didn't know if her husband or if Madison was the dad, and so was planning to get an abortion. And she was actually wanting Madison to be the one to perform the abortion, but I don't actually know if this abortion ever went ahead or not. Maybe she did end up having this child. Another person I want to possibly mention as a suspect here is Sam. He would have been the last one to see her alive, or the last one to admit that he saw her alive. So he could have easily poisoned her, I suppose, but why? He had literally no motive to do this, unless he's just really sick and just wanted to murder a woman for no reason whatsoever.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
I don't think Sam was the one to do this here. And as far as I can see anyway, Sam has never even been slightly considered as a suspect in this case. So I think here we have three very solid suspects, but I could not tell you which one I think is responsible. I do think Herschel possibly has more reason, and also he doesn't have much of an alibi. Like, he went home, then he went to the police station, then he went back to work, and he's just a bit all over the place, and he's not entirely accounted for that period of time. So I do think based on that, he is the most likely, but I think all three had their reasons and it could be any of them. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Mysteries and Histories. If you have a bit of time, I would love for you to go and leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast and spread the word. It would be much appreciated. I'll see you next week.